Okay, good evening and welcome to the next installment of The World That Once Was. Rabbinic Martyrs of the Holocaust. I want to thank Simcha and Debbie Firestone, who sponsored the series this year in loving memory of Debbie's mother, Joanne Epstein, whose neshama should have an aliyah. I hear all the murmurings already about the different spellings. The way I spelled Bornstein, Rav David Bornstein, the Sachet Shavar Rebbe, versus the way it's spelled on the cover of the handout. And that's because it's unclear. There is no authoritative way. He did not spell his name in English in Sochaczew, Poland. And so there is no authoritative way to spell his last name. So we call him the Sochaczew Rebbe. Who thought it'd be easier to spell Sochaczew than it would to spell Bornstein? But in any case, so we have an exciting evening. This is my last slot, I think, in Rabbinic Martyrs of the Holocaust. I think there's only one session left next week, Rabbi Blumenthal. And it was a great series, unfortunately, a tragic series, as we speak about these individuals who were so transformational, leaders who had such an impact, but whose lives, for the most part, were cut incredibly short. And we were denied the ability to benefit from the potential that they yet still had. Now, last time I taught in the series, I did the Eim HaBanim Smecha, Rav Teichtal, after which someone said, my maiden name is Teichtal, I'm his great-granddaughter. Mm-hmm. I'm confident there is no great-grandchild of the Sochaczew Rebbe here, because his entire family was murdered in the Holocaust. He was succeeded as Rebbe by his brother, who we'll see survived him by living in Beit Vegan in Yerushalayim. So I know that there are no direct descendants of him here. Anyone related to the Sochaczew dynasty, to the Rebbe's at all? Okay, good. It was a little intimidating last time after the fact. You're Sochaczew, Benji? I could see that. Can we get rid of this? Okay. They're coming? Okay, I'm sorry. Trying to figure out these computer issues tonight. Gone. Okay, good. Let's begin. In order to appreciate the Sochaczew Rebbe, Rav David Bornstein, one has to understand Sochaczew Hasidus. You have to give a little bit of background to understand the environment, the atmosphere in which he was born. Sochaczew Hasidus is not the early generation of Hasidim. We know that there was the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidus. And the Baal Shem Tov had the Maggid of Mezrich. The Baal Shem Tov had his immediate circle of students. And then, splintering and spreading out, students formed their own Hasidic courts. The Sochaczew Hasidus did not come about in that way. Rav Avram Bornstein, 1838 to 1910, was a close student of the Kotzke Rebbe. In fact, such a close student of the Kotzke Rebbe that he married the Kotzke Rebbe's daughter. Not only was he a student, not only was he a loyal chassid, he was a son-in-law of the Kotzke Rebbe. So Sochaczew Hasidus is based on the Kotzke Derech. It's important to spend 2 minutes on the Kotzke Derech. We all have our favorite vort, our favorite saying from the Kotzke Rebbe of Menachem Mendel of Kotzk. So the Kotzke Rebbe was the Sochaczew's father-in-law. After the Kotzke passed away, he became a chassid of his uncle, the Chidushei Arim, Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter, who was the Gerer Rebbe. So we're talking about some pretty impressive yichus here. The first Sochaczew Rebbe of Avram Bornstein was a son-in-law of the Kotzker and a nephew of the Ger Rebbe, the Chidushei Arim. In 1866, after the Chidushei Arim passed away, he became a chassid of the Alexander Rebbe, of Hanoch of Alexander. In 1870, when the Alexander Rebbe passed away, he had no choice but to agree to become a Rebbe himself. So the first thing you see about Rav Avram Bornstein is his humility, that he's a chassid of his shver, of his father-in-law, the Kotzker. And after the Kotzker passes away, of the Ger Rebbe, the Chiddush Harim. And after the Ger Rebbe passes away, the Alexander Rebbe. And then in 1870, when all of his Rebbes had passed away, caving into the pressure from those around him, he agreed to become, he was the Rav and Beis Din of Sochaczew. If you want to know where Sochaczew is, you could look at our map. It's west of Warsaw, north of Lodz, a suburb of Warsaw. And he agreed to become what was the first Sochaczew Rebbe. He was the Rav and Av Beis Din of Sochaczew, but when he agreed to create and establish a Hasidic court, he became the first Sochaczew Rebbe. Now, what do we know about Kotzk in order to appreciate what Sochaczew became? What do we know about Kotzk? Kotzke Rebbe, Rav Menachem Mendel Morgenstern, the Kotzke Rebbe was unusual for a Hasidic Rebbe. He set up his Hasidic court in the second quarter of the 19th century, and he's a Rebbe that appeals not only to Hasidim, but even non-Hasidim can identify, perhaps in some ways even more than other Rebbes. Why is that? The Kotzke Rebbe was known that he spent his entire life waging war and defending, pursuing relentlessly, emes. His signature, like that of the Ribono Shel Olam, was truth. What you'd call brutal honesty. What you might call radical honesty. The Kutzker had zero tolerance. He was allergic to false flattery. He was allergic to distortions. He was allergic to arrogance. He was allergic to corruption. He was a man of truth. People you know who cut right to the chase and say it as it is and have a fidelity and an honesty, integrity to the truth, unwavering, unequivocal, they are chassidim of the Kutzker Rebbe. A burning and a piercing kind of truth. A truth that sometimes is not so comfortable. Sometimes it's not so convenient, sometimes it's not so compatible, but that never held the Kutzker Rebbe back from saying what he felt anyway. The Kutzker Rebbe, I say he was unusual for Hasidus, because he had no tolerance for a lot of the Hasidic, what, for lack of a better term, though I don't mean it in an insulting sense, in a derogatory sense, but he had no tolerance for Hasidic shtick. So the idea of Rebbes who could perform miracles and mofsim, Kutzker Rebbe had no tolerance for that. The idea of some of the deviations or negotiation with halacha, with strict Jewish law, the Kutzker had no tolerance for that. For the Kutzker, the supremacy of Torah, the centrality of Torah learning. So the Kutzker himself focused not on miracles and mysticism, but the Kutzker Rebbe focused on the learning, the study, and the spreading of Torah, with an incredible emphasis on the truth. When the Kutzker was once asked why he didn't write a Sefer, we have a lot of sayings from the Kutzker Rebbe, but he didn't leave us in writing, he didn't leave us a Sefer. Why did the Kutzker not write a Sefer? This is one of my favorite Kutzkers. He said, you know, my Hasidim are busy. All week long they're working, and they're pulling the wagon and feeding their horses and trying to keep their head above water. The only time they would have to read my Sefer, to learn, would be Friday night. So what would happen? They sit down to the meal, and they'd eat the fish and have a l'chaim, and they'd have the main, and they'd have a dessert, and they'd lie on their couch, they'd sit back in the recliner chair with my sefer, the only time they have the whole week to learn it, and they'd open the sefer, and within 3 minutes it'd be on the floor in a puddle of drool. For that I should write a sefer, he said. So he didn't write a sefer. He didn't write a sefer. He was born into a family of misnagdim. He became a talmud of the Chozeh of Lublin. He left Lublin for a Peshischa. He became a talmud of Rav Simcha Bunim. But again, he always maintained that tremendous emphasis not only on truth, but on Torah study. Just to share with you quickly, the Kutzker Rebbe passed away in 1859. He spent, in fact, the last 20 years of his life in seclusion. He wasn't able to tolerate being around people. People have airs. People are fraudulent, people are fake and phony, society has rules. He couldn't tolerate any of that. He was a man of truth who cut right to the truth. He spent the last 20 years in seclusion. Here are the favorite sayings of the Kutzker Rebbe, a few of his favorite sayings. Some of them are very well known. For example, everyone knows the Kutzker who said, where is Hashem found? This supposedly the Kutzker was a little boy when he was asked, where can the Ribono Shel Olam be found? Where can God be found? And he answered, wherever you let him in. True Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere. That's Uncle Moshe, not the Kutzker. True Hashem is everywhere. Where is the Ribono Shel Olam found? Wherever you let him in. Kutzker Rebbe said, talk about Mofsim. He said, I also could revive the dead, but I prefer to revive the living. Speaking about the miracles that supposed Chassidish Rebbe's perform, he said, I also could revive the dead, but I prefer to revive the living. He said, this is a great one, the middle of the road is for horses. So much for the Rambam Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean. But the Kutzker said, the middle of the road, it's for horses. You got to take a position in life. You have to be principled. He couldn't tolerate among his Hasidim. He said, you know, God and I can forgive you for sinning. We can't forgive you for finding the time to sin. Meaning, if your time were taken up with such meaningful activity, you wouldn't even have the time. You wouldn't even have the time. He said, when people would say, I love fish, he'd say, you don't love fish. If you love fish, you wouldn't be eating the fish. You love your boich. You love yourself. We know, I post this every year on Erev Rosh Hashanah. We know that on Rosh Hashanah, people have a custom. What don't we eat on Rosh Hashanah? Nuts. Why don't we eat nuts? Because egos in gematria is chait. Nut. The numerical value of the word nut is the same numerical value of chait, of mistake, or of sin. So the Kutzker famously said, you know what else is gematria chait? Chet. Nobody avoids chet because it's the same gematria. Everyone's at their yontif table avoiding nuts. No kugel with nuts. No nuts in the salad. No nuts in dessert. But they're saying lashon hara, and that's a classic kutzker. You know what else is gematria chet? Chet. Kutzker said litvak serve the shulchan aruch, chasidim serve the ebishter. Kutzker said on Sukkos, he said, you know, some people say that they're so holy that they believe the Ushpizin are in their sukkah. Some people say they're so holy, they've seen the Ushpizin. He said, I don't see them, but I believe they're in my sukkah, and believing is even greater than seeing. Anyway, a lot of Kutzker aphorisms. Kutzker was fascinating. If you open your source book to source one, you'll see a description. And I want to thank my dear friend, Rabbi Kasorla, who for some bizarre reason had nowhere else better to be tonight and is here. But whenever you're stuck, you're researching something and you're scrambling because you're on an empty nester cruise with very poor Wi-Fi and you're struggling, you're not sure what you're going to do, get Rabbi Kasorla's email. The man knows everything and can point you in all the right directions. So Rabbi Kasorla, a groisa yashar koach, a thank you to you. So it's interesting that the Kutzker Rebbe, his main talmidim were his son-in-law, Rav Avram Bornstein, the Avnei Nezer, the first Sochet Shavar Rebbe, and the Chidush HaRim, and both of them were prolific authors. Each of them left us a treasure of writings. So even though the Kutzker himself was opposed to writing, it'll end up on the floor in a puddle of drool, but his two primary students, nevertheless wrote. Here you have a description that comes from this new book that came out. It's the thickest book, the biggest book I ever saw. It's called Chasidim, A New History. It came out recently. It was written by a relative of Makover's cousin. The Makover's cousin. And I thank them for my copy. So anyway, here he says the following, towards the top. Despite the fierce polemic, Rav Bornstein was not known widely as a public leader. His reputation stood on his vast scholarship and legal authority. His book, Egle Tal, which is on Malacha Shabbos, the 39 Labors Prohibited on Shabbos, was printed in his lifetime, and 2 years after his death, 7 volumes of his response were published under the title Avnei Nezer. So have you ever heard of the Avnei Nezer? That is the first Sochet Shavar Rebbe, Rav Avram Bornstein, the son-in-law of the Kutzker, and the nephew of the Chidush HaRim. Since Rav Bornstein preferred his study to his court, his only son Shmuel managed his father's affairs and led the court in Sochet Shavar during his father's lifetime, eventually succeeding his father's Rebbe. Trunk had this to say about Rav Shmuel Bornstein. He was tall and broad of build with a large, fleshy Slavic nose. His appearance was nothing like that of a young scholar. His Gentile physique seems to have influenced his frame of mind. He was the most calm and relaxed person. Basically, people who look like Jews are nervous and uptight and nervous hilarious. And if you're lucky enough to look like a non-Jew, you're calm and relaxed. The Kutzk sharpness, rather than expressed in restlessness, was revealed in his serenity and self-confidence. It was quite a bit of Slavic tyrant about him, and he managed himself and his household with vigor, even though many of his sons, who were themselves of strong and stubborn demeanor, later pursued non-Jewish culture. They joined the Revolutionary Workers' Movement, the Zionist Movement, and so on. That part's less clear. Trunk, who knew both Rav Avram and Rav Shmuel, knew the Avnei Nezer and the Shemi Shmuel, because his uncle married one of Rav Avram's granddaughters, described the austere way weddings were conducted in Sochet Shav at the end of the 19th century. The Sochet Shav court tried as much as it could to establish in it a Kutzk-like way of life. In Sochet Shav, they also did not have much regard for the klezmer band. But there's no choice. A wedding can't take place without a klezmer band. However, in this instant, the klezmer band members would feel displeased. The chassidim would push and shove them around, and when they would just begin to play, Rav Shmuel would call out, "Done." In other words, the obligation has been Yaitse Zayin. So you'd hire a klezmer band because a wedding needs a band, and 5 minutes into the first song, you yell, "Yaitse Zayin, Shoyin Genuk, done." Rav Amla would begin to discuss Torah matters. Instead, they would discuss Torah. So again, just it gives you a little of a sense, a feel for how Sochet Shav was a continuation of Kutzk. There was just no tolerance, no patience for that which was not deemed essential, that which was not deemed truth. So we got a little background of the Kutzker, his son-in-law, the first Sochet Shavar of Avram Bornstein, who only after he lost all of his other 3 previous Rebbes, agrees to become the Rebbe. Back to our PowerPoint. So the Sochet Shavar, the first Sochet Shavar Rebbe, Rav Avram Bornstein, wrote drushas published as Noz Desha, and wrote 7 volumes of responsa, Avnei Nezer, on all areas of Jewish law. There's not a halachic topic you're going to research today where the Avnei Nezer, the great Sochet Shavar, is not going to have written a tshuva or have an opinion on it. His only son, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, succeeded him as the second Sochet Shavar. He established the yeshiva Beis Avraham, named after his father. named after his father. He wrote 9 volumes called Shem Mishmuel. It's interesting, both the Avnei Nezer and Shem Mishmuel were published posthumously. They were both published after the lifetime. So maybe that is tell us something. Maybe they were true Kutzkers. Maybe that insight's not entirely accurate, because unlike Kutzkers, they took copious notes, they wrote novelty, they wrote Chidushim, but in both their cases it was published after their lifetime. The first Rebbe of Avram Bornstein, the Avnei Nezer, and the second, the Shem Mishmuel. The picture on the right is in Sochaczew, Poland, if you find yourself there today. That is the kever, the oil that has the kever of the first and second Sochaczew Rebbes, Rav Avram Bornstein and Rav Shmuel, the Shem Mishmuel. The picture on the left is the Shem Mishmuel. It's interesting. His eyes are not facing the camera. He's looking up, as if he's avoiding being pictured. He's focused on other worlds at that moment. So now we get to the third Sochaczew Rebbe, who is our protagonist, our subject for this evening. We are here to learn about Rav David Bornstein, the third Sochaczew Rebbe. He was born L05636, November 17th, 1876, in a village that I will butcher its pronunciation, Nasielsk, Poland. It's near Warsaw. So if we saw that Sochaczew is west of Warsaw, this little town is north of Warsaw, where his grandfather, the Avnei Nezer, was the Rav. Before he moved to Sochaczew, he was the Rav north of Warsaw. He was the oldest son of Rav Shmuel and Yuta Leah Bornstein. In 1883, when his grandfather moved and became the Rav of Sochaczew, the whole family. The Avnei Nezer, the son-in-law of the Kutzker, was a towering figure religiously, in leadership, in the family, the patriarch, and clearly everything revolved around him. When he moved to Sochaczew, the whole family moved with him, and Rav Shmuel, the Shem Yishmuel, bought a house on the same block as his father, and the whole Bornstein family relocated together to Sochaczew. He had a younger brother, Chanuch Henoch, and at least one sister, maybe other siblings as well. When he was younger, Rav David was taught privately by Rav Yitzchak Shlomo Lieberman, but his primary teacher during his childhood very quickly became his grandfather. If you are an einikel of the Avnei Nezer, why would you go to any other Rebbe? This is a man, the son-in-law of the Kutzker, Rav Avram Bornstein, who knows Shas, Poskim, Yerushalmi, Bavli, Kol Torah Kula, Nigla, Nister. He's writing tshuvas and he's a master of Chassidus. Why would you go learn with anyone else? He learns with his grandfather, with whom he becomes incredibly close. And I read several testimonials, and they all describe that the Avnei Nezer, clearly, Rav David, his grandson, was his favorite. He took a particular liking, and he already trained his grandson at a young age, trained him not only in Torah, but trained him in the ways of Chassidus. His grandfather took Rav David under his wing, taught him formal Torah, mysticism, Chassidus. They studied together for 33 years, which was the amount of time until his grandfather passed away. By the time he was bar mitzvah, the Avnei Nezer said about his grandson, he is an Adam Shalem, he is a complete person. He would sit and learn Friday nights until the candles went out. And when they went out, so during the week, you just light the next candle. When they go out on Friday night, what do? I go to sleep. The safer in a puddle of drool. What did the Rav David Bernstein do? When the candle went out, he took his Gemara, put on his coat, went outside and found a street lamp, and continued to learn out there. It didn't matter what the weather was, and Sochaczew, Poland, or where he was born before they moved to Sochaczew, was not exactly Boca Raton. 1891, he becomes engaged to Rachel, the daughter of Chaim Yisrael Morgenstern, the Pillow of a Rebbe, but she died the same year before the wedding could take place. So sadly, he lost his Kala. In 1893, 2 years later, he married Esther Weingut, daughter of Rav Motel Weingut, a Ger Chassid. It's not surprising he marries a Ger Chassid because, again, Ger is intertwined in the family. You have the Chidush Harim, who was his Rebbe. They lived in his grandfather's house where he continued to learn. So even after he got married, he then, instead of setting up his own home, that's how close he was with his grandfather, the Avnei Nezer, he lives in his home and continues to be mentored by his grandfather. In 1906, Rav David, his grandfather, decides, I've taught you enough, it's time to go out on your own to be independent, to spread the light of Torah of Chassidus, and Rav David takes up his first position in another city. I don't know, they didn't hear of vowels in Poland. I don't know how we're supposed to pronounce this. Wisegrod? Visegrod? Anyone know this town? Is anyone from there? It was a city of simple workers. The young scholar, the young Rav David Bornstein, had only recently emerged from his grandfather's, under his grandfather's wing, is now going out and meeting the masses, very simple people who are not well-versed and literate in Torah, and yet he's able to inspire, he's able to uplift, he's able to serve their needs in a very, very diverse, in a very diverse community. And here you see, I guess, if where he was born was north of Warsaw, and Sachachov was west, this is northwest of Warsaw, where he gets his first shteller. Here are two letters that we have. Whatever we have from him was sent before the war, before the Holocaust. So we have several letters, postcards, things that he wrote, and I find it's very fascinating. It doesn't come out well in the screen, but when you can't hear someone's voice or watch a video, and you have one picture, two pictures of them, seeing someone's handwriting feels very intimate, very personal. Handwriting, as opposed to something typed, handwriting gives you a medium to with which to connect with them. He established a yeshiva with hundreds of young men modeled after Sachachov Hasidus. Sachachov learning followed the Kutzker Derech, was Aliba de Hilchasa. Even though it deviated from what was the style of Pilpul, of intellectual gymnastics, it was, not surprisingly, the Kutzker Derech was to cut to the bottom line, to cut to the chase. Pilpul, how do you know it's emes? Here you are, varfing svaras, and you're offering intellectual gymnastics, and you're putting out a thesis, and someone else is challenging the thesis, and it's all coming from your boich. There's no tolerance. If you're a person of burning, piercing truth, you just want to get to what the halacha is the bottom line, that's going to be truth. When World War I breaks out, he was forced to move to Lodz. When the war ended, rather than return to where he was Rav, he moved to another town with few vowels called Tamazov, where he served from 1918 to 1926. And when his father died suddenly, when the Shem Mishmur of Shmuel Bornstein, when the second Sachachov Rebbe died somewhat suddenly, in January 1926, he was appointed to become the third Sachachov Rebbe. When did that appointment take place? Before the funeral was over. Before the Levaya of his father was done, the Hasidim had already pushed him and pressed him to take over as the third Sachachov Rebbe. It was the 24th of Teves, 1926. He established his court in Pabianice near Lodz. He founded a network of yeshivas under the name Beis Avram. Now he franchised out the yeshiva, which he had established in memory with the name that bore the name of his grandfather. There was a location in Lodz, Warsaw, and cities across Poland. He published a monthly journal entitled Beis Avram. It was disseminated the Sachachov method of Torah study. So it's very impressive. He's not only an outstanding Talmud Chacham, he's a community leader. He's the Rosh Yeshiva, the dean, if you will, of a network of yeshivas. He introduces a Torah journal because he wants to share the Sachachov Derech, the method of Torah study. In addition to being a Rebbe and a Rosh Yeshiva, he was active in Agudas Yisrael. He was a member of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, a member of the Rabbinical Association of Poland. So he didn't just retreat and withdraw. Unlike his great-grandfather, the Kutzker, he didn't spend his time in seclusion. He was active not only in the community that he served, the Hasidim for whom he was a Rebbe, the network of yeshivas for whom he was a Rosh Yeshiva, but also rabbinic organizations. I found this picture, actually in a sefer on Rav Elchanan. Otzer HaChachma is incredible. But I found in a sefer about Rav Elchanan, the picture again is a little blurry here, but if you can read on the bottom, it says Rav Elchanan and Rav Aaron Cutler are having a discussion. Standing in front of them is Rav David Bornstein. So in a sefer about Rav Elchanan and Rav Aaron Cutler are schmoozing. This must have been at an Agudas Yisrael convention. And they're schmoozing, and in front of them is Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachachov Rebbe. Now, very interesting, and here it relates a little bit to Rav Teichtal, the Emma Banam Smecha, but not the same at all. If you remember at the end of the Emma Banam Smecha class that we had a month ago, 6 weeks ago, we mentioned there's a big debate. What is the legacy, the lasting legacy of Rav Teichtal, the Emma Banam Smecha? The religious Zionist community in Israel and abroad love to celebrate the Emma Banam Smecha as a chassid of the Munkacher who, in the horrors of the Holocaust, reversed his previous thinking and became this advocate, the spokesperson. Within the Teichtal family themselves, and I confirm this with his great-granddaughter who was here, and her father, who is named Rav Shlomo Yisachar Teichtal, named after his grandfather, Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, they disagree. And they say that their grandfather, Emma Banam Smecha, is a call to return to Eretz Yisrael and to bring a religious way of life, but it shouldn't be confused whatsoever with what we think of as religious Zionism. So there is a debate as to the lasting legacy of the Emma Banam Smecha. There is no debate about the legacy of Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachachov Rebbe, but there's no Zionism. There's no hint of Zionism, but there is a burning love of Eretz Yisrael. A burning love of Eretz Yisrael. He was a proponent of making Aliyah, settling the land of Israel. And he promoted it to his Hasidim. He said he himself would have emigrated if not for the thousands of followers in Poland who relied on him. He visited Palestine. That was our name when Jews lived there before others took it. He visited Palestine four times, including 1924, 1925. He was greeted by the biggest rabbanim in Palestine, foremost among them, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. In fact, I'll show you, it's very interesting. Oh, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it in the source sheets. At the Agudas Yisrael Conference in Poland in 1934, he gave an impassioned speech in favor of promoting settling in Eretz Yisrael. Because, quote, from Eretz Yisrael will come the revival of Israel to last until the Messianic era. So he was very outspoken. The centrality of the land of Israel to our religious identity and pushing people to move there, not from a Zionistic perspective or even a religious Zionistic perspective, from what he deemed a pure Torah perspective. When he was a member of the Council of Torah Sages, he influenced the relationship of Israel to the land of Israel in a famous speech that he gave about it. He visited 1925, accompanied by an entourage of family members and close associates. He visited the holy places, Yerushalayim, Tzfas, the new settlements, wellsprings of inspiration, holy enthusiasm. He spent Purim in Tel Aviv, full of happiness and rejoicing, Pesach in Yerushalayim, and Lag BaOmer in Meron. It's quite a mission to Israel. On the first trip, he took his younger brother, Rav Chanoch Henoch, and he put a down payment on a plot of land south of Ramla with the goal of creating a city for his Hasidim. So he was a very big visionary. Not only did he have a community and a Hasidic court and a network of yeshivas, and was he a member of the Agudas Yisrael, the Moatzes Gedolei HaTorah, but he had his eye on going to Israel, and he wanted to create, like Kfar Chabad, he wanted to create a settlement of his Hasidim, of Sachat Shavar Hasidim, in Israel. He put a down payment on a plot of land. Meanwhile, Rav Chanoch Henoch, his younger brother, when he went back to Poland, stayed in Yerushalayim. He lived in the Bukharim neighborhood, and then he settled on Chida Street in what was then the new Bayit Vegan neighborhood in Yerushalayim, where he established a Beis Medrash. His younger brother ended up staying in Israel, which is why there's a continuation of the Sachat Shavar Hasidus today. When he returned to Poland to raise the rest of the money, he ran into an economic depression. It thwarted his plans, and ultimately they lost that plot of land. Before we get to the Holocaust, so look back, go to the source sheets. Page number 2, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri De'esh. Last week's Mishpacha magazine had a wonderful article on the Sri De'esh by one of his closest Talmidim. The Sri De'esh has a fantastic essay called Esachai Anochi Mevakesh, My Brothers I Request. And he's talking there about Avas Yisrael, loving one another. I love that essay. I find it incredibly powerful. And in the middle of that essay, he makes a reference. He says, B'Mareband, where there was an Agudah convention, Nitnali Pa'amim Rabos Izdamnuz Ladunim Rabbanim Shonim Mehungri or Mepolin Al Ba'ayos Hashchita. I had the opportunity to interact with Hungarian and Polish rabbis regarding the issue of slaughter. Shamdu al perkeitz al yadu shamer sa mitzvah shebegermania. Kol harabanim ubeneim balei shem karebi misochetshov, Rav David Bornstein, Rav Rashi, Rav Chanoch Tzvi Levin, and so on. Hayu b'dei achas, hochichu avana amuka legabishas hametzuka, shenotzer begermania. It's hard to believe that in 2019, by the way, we're revisiting the same attempt in Europe by some countries to ban shchita, that they were dealing with this in this convention back in the time of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. I shared this in the source sheet only because it's an example of a contemporary's testimony of the greatness, lest you think I made it up for the PowerPoint, that Rav David Bornstein was involved in Jewish communal life. You see here he is a prominent player, such a prominent player at this Agudah convention, that when the Sri De'esh is referencing with whom he conferred regarding Shechita, who does he mention? He mentions the Sachat Shavar Rebbe of David Bornstein. Turn to page 3. In a shir I'd given previously about, is there a mitzvah to live in Israel? You cannot examine the issue of, is there a mitzvah to live in Israel, without looking at the Avnei Nezer, Yoredei Chelik Beis, Siman Tov Nun Dalet. So I just put this page in here to show you, where did Rav David Bornstein get this burning love of Eretz Yisrael from, likely? He got it from his Eda, his grandfather, with whom he lived for so many years and learned from for 33 years. If you look at the third paragraph, O Zion, in that Shuva, there's a whole discussion. The Rambam does not count the mitzvah to live in Israel. So Megillas Esther says, why? Because the Rambam holds there's no mitzvah. Shalosh Shavuos, until Mashiach comes, we don't go and resettle the land of Israel. Others give other reasons why the Rambam doesn't include it. The Avnei Nezer among them. But the Avnei Nezer concludes, Ha'olam yizeh she'ein smach kval me'a Rambam lomar she'ein noy bizman hazeh. Ha'davar borer she'noy bizman hazeh. Is a davar borer to the Avnei Nezer? It was clear as day that the mitzvah of Yishuv Ha'aretz, the mitzvah to live in Israel, applies in our time as well. So you can imagine if he's growing up in the lap and at the desk in the study of the Avnei Nezer, Rav David Bornstein is absorbing that passion, that love, that enthusiasm, and that halachic position that there is a mitzvah in our time to live in Israel. Turn to page 4. This is the speech Rav David Bornstein of Sochatchev gave at the opening of the 4th Convention of Agudas Yisrael in Poland in 1934. This is that speech. And listen to what he said. This is that fiery speech we alluded to. He says, "Kvod Kedushas Avi Mori, Ayakore Kol Yom Chayav La'Avodas Eretz Yisrael. My father, the Shem Yishmuel, the second Sochatchev Rebbe, used to always call all of his days to serve Eretz Yisrael. Gam Kvod Kedushas Zikne Admor, Mora Halacha B'Shavas Shuvas Avnei Nezer, Kimitzis Yishuv Aretz, Nohages Gam B'Zman Hazeh. The Zeda also, the Avnei Nezer, my grandfather of Avram Bornstein, also passed into Lacha L'Maisa. We just saw that Shuv inside. Hayehudi HaKadosh Haya Omer Ala Kol Acham Yisrael Chayav L'Kayim Yisrael Mitzvah Shev Torah, Ramach Hashem Aseh V'Shasah Lo Saseh, and so on. Skip down to my next underline. L'fichach Kishanu Roam Shat Shuka La'Arteinu HaKadosh Nezgal Sovin Ezrabsa. We who see that the longing to return to our holy land has proliferated, has grown, has spread. Hashi'ifa kavira etzal anashim charedim dorshe Hashem v'doagei mitzvosav nisorura. The shi'ifa, the aim, the goal among charedim who are dorshe Hashem, who seek out God, who worry about mitzvos. So they've become awakened, they've aroused towards this mitzvah of coming to Israel. Chol Yisrael nechsafim lalos arza kadosha. Simen hu she'achshav hazman ha'miyuchad lasak b'mitzvah zusha yishuv eretz Yisrael. Now, he's not referring to Zionism or even religious Zionism, but he sees there is an awakening, a longing to return to our holy land, which his grandfather paskened is a mitzvah. And so he says, we don't forfeit this to the secular or to anyone else. He therefore begins the 4th Agudah Convention 1934 with a passionate call for Aliyah. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Nefesh B'Nefesh had a booth at that convention. Ach Yisod Ve'Evan Pinul Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now here's where he deviates from the classic Zionism. He says, however, the foundation, the cornerstone of returning to Israel, Hishmiras HaTorah VaMitzvah. It only pays to go to Israel to set up sovereignty, a government in Israel, if it will be informed, inspired, it'll be governed by the rules of Torah and Mitzvos. Even after God describes the four terms of redemption, so he says that the end goal of going to Eretz Yisrael is not just to be in Eretz Yisrael. The end goal of being in Eretz Yisrael is to live a life that is informed, inspired, regulated, governed by Torah and mitzvos. You see the passion, the enthusiasm. These were his opening remarks at the 4th Agudah Convention, 1934. Interestingly, I also found online, in a sefer called HaRebbe Mikotsk, page number 5. This is a letter that Rav David Bornstein, the third Sochatchev Rebbe, wrote to, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, when his father, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, passed away. Interesting, right? I guess it was in the possession of the Cook family, and that's how we had it. It's very interesting because we have this impression. It's worth studying Rav Cook. Rav Yoshev had no problem. Rav Cook was Rav Yoshev's Shadchan and Mesader Kedushin. We have this impression that the Torah world, the right-wing Torah world, rejects Rav Kook. But in his lifetime, Rav Kook was a gadol who they certainly didn't embrace all of his hashkafas, but they saw his stature and his esteem. So here you have the third Sochatchev Rebbe, who when Rav Kook is nifta, writes a letter to his son saying, we've lost the Mara Da'asra of Eretz Yisrael, a gon. Oilus Vina Sha'avda Kabarnita Kila Da'avenu Eretz Yisrael Kisvina Muturefes Bayama Deos Hashonos. V'huzal haya kabarnita ma'ached. Woe to the boat who loses its captain. Eretz Yisrael is like a boat that's being thrown back and forth in the sea of different opinions about what should happen, and we've lost the captain who knew how to steer the boat of Eretz Yisrael. Shaya barucha pishnayim laloch neged rucha shekol echad ve'echad u'mamesh avda ha'aretz ez manhiga harav harashi. The land has lost its leader, the Rav Harashi, Rav Kook. Fascinating, no? This is a Muetzes Gedolei HaTorah. This is the head of this big Hasidus, the Sochatchev Rebbe, Rav David Bornstein in Eretz Yisrael. And lastly, in terms of this segment, page 6. Also in that same Sefer, our Rebbe Mekotsk, it has a letter that the Sachet Shav Rebbe of David Bornstein wrote to his Hasidim in Israel when they finally opened the Shtibel in Tel Aviv. And the Sachet Shavers opened Hasidei Sachet Shav b'Tel Aviv. So he wrote them a letter. And he says, Ayir libchem zaki ikr beis atfilu l'sachet v'lasos aguda achas osam anoshim shemihem oskim b'toyer b'shkeda u'mehem bali mitzvahs b'meret v'hem bali mischor bali malocha she'evo v'yisagdu elu. In Elu, Tel Aviv is being formed. In Tel Aviv, there's a battle. What will define Tel Aviv? And so he's telling his Sachet Shav Hasidim who have a shtibel in Tel Aviv, make it a welcoming, warm, open place for people of all backgrounds. Because a shul is supposed to be a place of unity. It's resonated, obviously, for me, given the mission statement and the way that we live our lives here in Boca Raton Synagogue, that the shul needs to be a place. Zeu ikar avas Yisrael she'idu kol echad she'ish lo ha'shlomo mitzad ha'klal, afilo ha'gadol me'akotan mimenu. Veze ikar be'eretz Yisrael she'nemar ki mika amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. She'sham ikar mokam ha'torah va'mitzvos. Jewish unity specifically is needed in Israel more than anywhere else. Who is a goy echad? Where? Ba'aretz. We have to be a goy echad. Where? In ba'aretz. Could use a little of this today. Ein Torah ketorah se'et Yisrael v'harbe mitzvos ha'tliyuz ba'aretz. And so on and so forth. So you see that. So far what we've seen, this is the first part, that Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachet Shav Rebbe, the son of the Shem Yishmur of Shmuel Bornstein, the grandson of Avram Bornstein, the Avnei Nezer, the great-grandson of the Kutzker Rebbe. He's a Talmud Chacham, he's a member of the Metzah's Gedolei Torah, he's a Masmid, he's an Adam Shalim at a young age. He learns 33 years with his grandfather. He has a burning passion for Israel, where he tries to set up his Hasidim. And then, of course, which is why this is one of the units for the martyrs of the Holocaust. Rosh Hashanah 1939, the Nazis invade Lodz. At that time, the second largest community in Europe. They came to the Rebbe's home. They beat him. They cut off his beard. They forced him outside to clean the streets. Because their methodology was not only physical torture, but psychological, emotional torture. And what would torture the residents of Sochachev, or of Lodz, more than to see their most prominent rabbi, clean shaven, without his beard, outside doing menial labor, outside cleaning the streets. His Hasidim obtained forged documents, smuggled him into the Warsaw Ghetto, where he lived incognito. Fascinating, right? Where was a safer place to be than Lodz? Than where he might have been deported to? Was to be snuck into the Warsaw Ghetto. We have hindsight. So in retrospect, we know what happens with the Warsaw Ghetto. But in real time, not knowing what's happening around, the thought was it would be safer being smuggled into the Warsaw Ghetto. Here's a picture, it's cut off, of the Warsaw Ghetto. Nevertheless, people flocked to his home for Torah study, communal activity. He continued to conduct a tish every Friday night. He tried to live anonymously, he tried to live incognito in the ghetto, because he knew the Nazis were targeting him, but he was unsuccessful, because when word spread that he was there, Hasidim gathered around him for his leadership, for his spirituality, for his support, for his chizuk, such that he had a tish every Friday night. A witness describes many Torah sages who had not yet been transported from the city came to his house with ordinary people seeking words of encouragement and solace. If you look, page number 7, the Warsaw Ghetto Diaries, Dr. Hillel Seidman. So he chronicles his experience in the Warsaw Ghetto, so much of what we know. And he describes in an entry for Tuesday, January 5th, 1943. He writes the following. During the war, the Sachet Shav Rebbe of David Bornstein secretly stayed here too. His grandson, Nassim Bakhari, a talented young man, managed to conceal him throughout the terror. And the Rebbe merited to survive the most difficult stages of deportations. The Rebbe died from natural causes, received a proper Jewish burial in the ghetto. That was known as a luxury death. When you died of natural causes in the ghetto, that was a luxury death. I actually took part in the Sachet Shav Rebbe's Levaya. Only a small crowd was present. Later in the diary, page 8, later in Dr. Hillel Seidman's diary, he writes, starting from the top, the Judenrat prepared forms to be completed by potential emigrants detailing the degree of kinship in the land registry particulars of real estate they owned in Eretz Yisrael. Thousands of Jews lined up at their offices, the line stretching all the way back. Those desperate enough employed personal recommendations or money to avoid the long lines. Many wanted to know how close the kinship was needed, a cousin, an uncle, a stepbrother, brother-in-law. The Judenrat's legal subcommittee dealing with the registration judged all queries leniently. They were broad-minded. Any relation was sufficient to be registered. The paper mountain grew, forms upon filled forms, and long list of those hoping to emigrate to Palestine. Officially, according to the German instructions, everyone had to turn up personally to register. Yet there remained in the ghetto a number of Hasidic Rebbes and prominent Rabbanim who were too apprehensive to appear outside in the street. With their distinctive Hasidic attire, they were an obvious target and in greater danger from the Nazis than anyone else. After a personal request from the Sachachov Rebbe of David Bornstein, I undertook to overcome their predicament. Accompanied by two of the Judenrat officials in charge of the register, Asha Frankel and Ms. Mavshevitz, we visited all the prominent rabbinic personages at their homes. So here he's describing, again, confirming, this is a first-hand account, this is Hillel Seidman's diary, in which he has a personal account, how they were targeted, they had to lay low, they had to hide, so much so that in order to register him, to avoid the wrath of the Nazis, he went to their house. Page number 9 comes from the Hidden in Thunder, Esther Farbstein, and she writes the following. Other reports arrived from Lublin, and this is really the next comment. If you go back to the, if you look at the PowerPoint again, Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachachov Rebbe, was one of the first leaders in Warsaw to warn of the impending transports. How did he warn? He told Hasidim, he spoke to leaders in the Warsaw ghetto and said, this is not a place that we have a future. They're going to deport us. It's very, very dangerous. How did he know? So go back to Esther Farbstein. It was probably in the home of the Sachachov Rebbe in the Warsaw ghetto, the two important refugees from Lublin. Rav Yosef Kenigsberg, one of the directors of the Yeshivas Chochmei Lublin, and Dr. Plansker delivered their testimony describing the deportation from Lublin and the Maidanek death camps. One of the escapees from Treblinka also went to the Sachachov Rebbe's home, after which leading rabbis from Warsaw and refugee rabbis, Rav Menachem Zemba, who I think Rabbi Moskowitz spoke about, Rav Simcha Treistman, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Orlian, Rabbi Yitzchak Krish Eidelberg met in Rabbi Shimshon Stockheimer's home to hear the news. Although not everyone present believed the fugitives, some did and urged people to hide the children. At the start of the big Akshion in Warsaw, for example, when the ghetto was enveloped by uncertainty, Rav Kalanimus Kalman Shapiro, the Piazetzna Rebbe, whom we studied a couple months ago, told his followers to get their daughters out of the ghetto because the transports meant death. The Rebbe of Pilsk gave similar instructions in the other ghetto. So you see, yeah, however that's pronounced, you see that they were informed. They were acting as leaders within the ghetto itself. There were meetings that took place in their home among leadership. They received briefings as to what was taking place outside the Warsaw ghetto. And as a result of hearing those briefings, Rav David Bornstein, the Sachachov Rebbe, got the word out and warned others that there was going to be impending transports. Purim 1940, the Rebbe and his family found that they could be saved. The government authorities in Rome were willing to give him papers to enter Italy. It was still a neutral country in those days, but he refused to leave his Hasidim. He stayed in the Warsaw ghetto. He refused to save himself. He didn't want to leave his Hasidim and friends who were like one large family. He was the captain whose ship was in danger. You don't abandon the ship until the last of the passengers is safe. So what did he do in the ghetto? He had the opportunity to be saved. He had the opportunity to escape. He didn't take up on it. So what did he do? What was his life like in the ghetto? During that time, he learned. He printed the unpublished Chidushim of his grandfather, the Avni Nezer, on Erevin. He still created and coordinated learning, tishes, davening. On the last sukkahs of his life, 1942, he was visited by many refugees who had arrived to the ghetto. And one described, quote, I was invited to the Rebbe's tish and I partook of the meal. That sukkahs, I became a different person. In those moments, the stresses of the times were sheared from my mind. I moved into a different world, cleansed of physicality. The melodies to which he sang, the verses of Koheles, emphasizing every word, translating into Yiddish, still ring in my ears. During the holiday, he voiced his Torah teachings and his Hasidic statements as if immersed solely in heavenly matters. First-hand testimony again that not despondent, not hopeless, not helpless, not depressed, not weakened spiritually. The story of Rav David Bornstein, like so many, it's really the theme of the entire series, is of the spiritual resistance in the Holocaust. There's so much emphasis on the physical resistance, and it's very poignant that we're talking here about the Warsaw Ghetto. Yom HaShoah V'HaGvura. We call it Yom HaShoah. But Yom HaShoah, its full name is Yom HaShoah V'HaGvura. And it is associated with the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. Because when Israelis commemorate the Shoah, that mentality that we can't see ourselves as sheep to slaughter, as passive victims, as individuals who didn't fight back. So they established the commemoration of Yom HaShoah in the context of V'HaGvura, the ghetto uprising, physical resistance in the Holocaust. We know, and we're grateful, the pride of the IDF, the pride of Israel. One can remember back when, and please God it should never happen again, but when there were suicide bombers, the cafe would be cleaned up and operational that night, the next morning. One would not see themselves as a victim. So there is an entire study, which is very important, about the physical resistance in the Holocaust. But there's also an arena of spiritual resistance in the Holocaust. We've studied several times in the past the tshuvas of Rav Oshri, the tshuvas mimamakim in the Kovna ghetto, the volumes and volumes and volumes of questions he was asked. They're mind-boggling. They're astounding. The presence of mind, the courage, the faith of the kind of questions that people asked in the ghetto, in the concentration camp. Five volumes of tshuvas mimamakim from the depths. And here, this whole theme of all the classes that have been taught by Kasorla, by Blumenthal, by Moskowitz, and myself, this whole theme of this unit of the rabbinic martyrs of the Holocaust is of spiritual resistance, to be in the Warsaw ghetto and fear Tish, and on Sukkot to sing the Psukkim of Kohelas, and to teach Torah, and the Eish Kodesh, to give drushes in the Warsaw ghetto, that is spiritual resistance. For more testimony, go to page 11. Rav David Bornstein of Sachachov had inherited the position of Rebbe in 1926. His court was based in Lodz, where he founded a yeshiva. The Rebbe was known for his love of Eretz Yisrael, which he visited four times. He did a conference, he gave an impassioned speech, and so on. When Lodz was occupied, he was severely abused. He was then moved to Warsaw, where his home became a center for Torah scholars in the ghetto. As described by Hillel Seidman in a letter to Eliyahu Mazur, one of the leaders of the Warsaw Jewish community, who had left Poland at the start of the war. This letter does not appear in the Warsaw Ghetto Diaries, but this is a letter that Eliyahu Mazur had, he received from Hillel Seidman at the beginning of the war. And this is what was written about the Sachachov Rebbe. His house was full from end to end every time. Many people, including rabbis and activists, came to ask advice and hear encouragement. He was busy day and night with Torah and service of God, the source of encouragement. The groups of students in the ghetto by his Hasidim, Rav Amalam Weinberg, Rav Avram Frumer, the Kasher Glover, were under his spiritual influence. A few hundred from the Shem Yishmo Yeshiva studied there. There were two yeshivas in the region, and one probably based off Ram Yeshiva's name for the author, Avni Nazer. Another witness described it as follows, quote, many Torah sages who had not yet been transported from the city came to his house along with ordinary people seeking words of encouragement. He was told what was happening in various places, news of the mass murders. He was one of the first leaders in Warsaw to warn of impending transport. Even when the ghetto inhabitants were starving, his table was a place for discussions of Torah and faith. On the last sukkahs of his life, and we just read that quote. He passed away in the ghetto in November 1942. His funeral drew a large crowd, including the Rebbe's, who still survived in the ghetto. It's interesting because here he's quoting another testimony who says it drew a large crowd, whereas we saw Hillel Seidman said he was at the funeral and it was a small crowd. How do you reconcile the two opinions? It's all a question of what do you define as large and small. Seidman writes, how many were at the funeral? 500. I guess from the perspective of a Rebbe like the Sachachov Rebbe, that's nothing. But for the perspective of a funeral in the Warsaw Ghetto, 500 was large. So it's all a question of perspective. Rosh Hashanah 1940, the Rebbe sent a letter out to his Hasidim, telling them to do tshuva, warning them the impending destruction that was going to be visited on the ghetto. He convened a meeting of Rabbanim in the summer of 1942 to warn them about the future. He worked in several factories in the ghetto. There were several factories that were set up. Very righteous people who protected, in particular, Rosh Yeshiva Rebbe's Rabbanim. One of those factories is the Schultz factory. That's a picture of the Schultz factory. Rav Avram Hendel was able to provide cover and was able to help certain Rosh Yeshiva Rabbanim be able to work in the factory, and that's where he was. When the deportations began, the Rebbe went into hiding. He was afraid to be in a factory. Again, he had a target from the Nazis. So he hid in a shop. He died there in that shop while he was hiding. He died of heart failure November 17th, 1942. His Yahrzeit is the 8th of Kislev. He was buried, the very last person to be buried, in a cemetery in Warsaw, next to Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Chem de Shlema, the Rav of Warsaw. We don't know where his grave is. It was obviously the Warsaw Ghetto, the middle of the Holocaust. They didn't set up a tombstone, a headstone. The next day, the Nazis closed the cemetery. So they were able to bury him, but the Nazis shut down the cemetery before they were able to put up a headstone, which is why we know he's near the Chem de Shlomo, but we don't know where he is, where he's buried today. The Rebbe's wife, children, children-in-law, and grandchildren were all murdered by the Nazis in the spring of 1943. That illustrious dynasty from Kutsk to Rav Avram Bornstein, the Avni Nezer, the first Sachachov Rebbe, to Rav Shmuel Bornstein, the Shem Yishmuel, the second Sachachov Rebbe, to the third Rebbe, Rav David Bornstein, that lineage, that dynasty was cut short. Everyone, the whole family, murdered by the Nazis in 1943. Almost all of his Torah manuscripts were destroyed or lost. We have a few pages in the Haggadah we're going to look at in a moment, published as the Chasdei David in the back of Shem Yishmuel's father's Sefer. the leadership of Sachachov was passed to his brother. You remember we mentioned 1926, he went to Israel with his younger brother. He put a plot of land, a down payment, south of Ramla. He wanted to create a kfar, a settlement for his chassidim, for Sachachovers. Ended up with the shtibel in Tel Aviv. Well, his brother stayed in Israel. And his brother opened the Beis Medrash in Bayit Vagam in the early 1920s. There still is a Sachachov. It's called Yeshivas Avnei Nezer in Bayit Vagan Ad Hayom Hazeh today. And that brother, that younger brother who stayed in Bayit Vagan in Israel, became the fourth Sachachov Rebbe. After everyone else was brutally murdered by the Nazis. So this is the Sachachov dynasty. Rav Avin Bornstein, the Avnei Nezer. Shmuel Bornstein, the Shem Yishmuel. Rav David Bornstein, the Chazdei David, our topic of our talk. His brother, younger brother, Rav Chanoch Henoch Bornstein, died in 1965. His son took over, Rav Menachem Shlomo Bornstein. Look at the years of his life, 1934 to 1969. 35 years old. He was killed in a car accident at 35 years old. His son, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, was 8 years old at the time, became the Sachachov Rebbe, and that's a picture of him. He was born in 1961. That is the current Sachachov Rebbe in Bayit Vagan, lighting his menorah. That is the story of Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachachov Rebbe, the tragic story. And we lost. We lost. His grandfather has 7 volumes of Avnei Nezer. His father has 9 volumes of Shem Yishmuel. And he too was a prolific writer. He took notes in the margins of his Svarim, Shas, Shulchan Aruch, Poskim. He wrote his own Chidushim. All those manuscripts, almost all those manuscripts were lost. Page 13, I found, also thanks to Otzer HaChochma, this is someone collected, I guess, the notes in the margin that Rav David Bornstein wrote on Hilchas Pesach. Here in the introduction he writes, Hagon Rav David Bornstein, Hashem Yikom Damo, Nolod Barash Chodesh Elul, Aviv Rav Shmuel, Shem Yishmuel, Shayachosno Shabinosh Rav Shlomo Akoin Mirodemsk, Tver Shlomo. Rabbeinu Gadol V'chonach HaBerke Zikino, he grew up on his grandfather of Avram Avni Nezer, Ukfar Bigil Acharasar He'id Alav Zikino. At 11 years old, his Zayda said, Kiyodehu Asayana Chazaka Yashar V'afoch. At 11 years old, his grandfather testified about him. He knows the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka backwards and forwards. 11 years old. Mom and Dad, what was I doing at 11 years old? We don't want to talk about it. 11 years old. Backwards and forwards. It says here, Ksav Yad Nimtza Eitzel Rav Avraham Alevi Shisha Shlita. I don't know who this is, but somebody had these volumes of Shulchan Aruch that have the notes in the margin of Rav David Bornstein. It's tragic. This is what we have left. So he published them here. These are just the simple ha'aras, the notes in the margin on Hilchos Pesach. The only actual writing we have of the Chasdei David, of the Sachachov of David Bornstein, is an essay he has about the Haggadah, about Nisan, about Pesach, and it was published in the 9th volume, the final volume of the Shem Yishmuel, which is the Shem Yishmuel's commentary, his father, the Shmuel Bornstein, on the Haggadah. This is the cover page inside, the title page, and you see it quotes, this is the Sefer, the son of Rav Avram Yisachachov, the Eglital of Nenezer, Rav Shmuel, the Shem Yishmuel, and Achi, my brother, Admor, Rav David. Asher Nishmaso HaTahora also l'mramim kechodesh kislev bevarsha hanitzura b'mechurban kilos Yisrael b'Poland. So who published it? His brother. His brother, who became the fourth Rebbe, got a hold of the manuscript, this one essay that survived of all the writings, and he publishes it together with the Shem Yishmuel. He says the Yatzir Rishon Imri Kodesh Shem Yishmuel Hagada, but Siruf Likutei Amaram Chazdei David Me'eis from my brother Admor Asher Matzana Ben Tamidav Shnishu Lefleita by Etz Hakodesh. How did he find it? This essay were the notes by the students Chassidim of Rav David Bornstein in Eretz Yisrael, and they were able to collect it. Likutim halal binyani pesach gamela nitzam odu itano himrak ma'at mizar shahu im b'ksavim nishmedu b'avonosein harabim b'tigras yad ha'oyev v'nalmu aval od la'pas ha'tikva shizgalu b'meshach hazman. His younger brother, that fourth Rebbe, says these notes, this one essay, is all that we have, all survived, but we haven't given up tikva, we haven't given up hope that yet more manuscripts will emerge, more of his writings, more of his Torah. So not only did he lose all of his children, grandchildren, he lost his whole family, but he lost his spiritual legacy, all the Chidushim, all the Torah as well. So the last few pages that you have here in the source book is that essay. The right-hand column is his father, the Shem Yishmuel, on Parshas HaChodesh. And the left-hand column is the Chasdei David, is the essay by Rav David Bornstein. And it's HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshim. Now, when I taught Rav Teichtel, you might remember that we studied Rav Teichtel the night of his Yeretzayim. It's mind-boggling. It was not planned that way. Kosh Baruch Hu makes plans. So it was the night of his Yeretzayim. This is not quite as powerful, but if you look at the one writing we have, what parsha is it on? Look where I bracketed. Who is endowed with those three things, Chachma, Tvuna, and Das? This week's parsha, Betzalel ben Uri ben Hur, in Parshas Kisisa. So this essay begins with a medrash on our parsha Kisisa, as if begging us to learn this piece and making it so appropriate for tonight. And he talks here about Chabad, Chachma, Bina, and Das, and their role, the centrality of Torah learning. Again, this is the Sachet Shavar Derech. This is the Kotzker Derech, the centrality of Torah, that when we build the Mishkan, we become a partner with Hashem and Maisa Brishis, just like Torah is the completion of the formation of the world. You have the whole essay. If you turn to the last page, page 18. Inyan Parshas HaChodesh Ba'adam. Now we're learning his Torah. The Gemara says when you learn someone's Torah, their lips quiver in the grave. We don't know where he's buried. Somewhere underneath Warsaw, in that Warsaw cemetery. We can't visit his tombstone. We can visit the one essay of Torah he left us. When we study his words, his lips continue to move. Sosos dovavos bakever. Inyan parsha zachodesh ba'adam kama she'amr chodesh chadash va'avei korba mitshuma chadasha she'yisromei mikol ma'asav she'avru asher lo ha'shem heima v'zeh inyan truma v'yichadish ma'asav l'skarev l'ashem v'zeh ma'ura ko'a chidash abriya ba'olam. Parshas HaChodesh, we're still in the first Adar, but we'll get to reading Parshas HaChodesh. Chodesh is Chiddush. It's renewal, rejuvenation, excitement. It's giving Hashem from ourselves means renewing with a sense of vibrancy and enthusiasm and energy. Uvetivo mechadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. Tiglas b'chinas habriya, v'shabash b'chinas chiddush habriya, b'orachayim shekol habriya ha'yisarak v'shishu yamim. V'b'chol shabas mechadeshes al haba, az b'yoseh ishmakam l'kabal l'chadesh ma'asav. So why do we read Parshas HaChodesh on Shabbos? He quotes from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim says, do you know that God only agrees to renew the world for 6 days? And at the end of Friday, God is making a decision. Every day at the end of Friday, God's deciding whether he's going to renew the world's contract for yet one more week. Or is this it? It's been a fun experiment. He's shutting the lights. He's turning the lights off. So the Or HaChaim says, Mechadesh b'tivo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. Kadosh Baruch Hu renews. The contract has to be renewed. When is it renewed? On Shabbos. Shabbos is a time of chiddush. You have time for a shluf. You're disconnected from the narishkeit of technology. You're able to concentrate and focus on what matters and what's important. Shabbos is the time of chiddush. HaChodesh hazeh lachem. Shabbos parshas HaChodesh. Zehu inyan mashakorim parshas HaChodesh b'Shabbos. V'lachin yesh b'Shabbos koach ha-mevatel arba malchios. Shabbos is the power to overcome and triumph over all these energies that are conflicting, that are confronting us. Umizgala b'Shabbos inyan dal charoshim ki gimel sudas Shabbos neged gimel ha'avos sudas malav amalkin neged David amelach heim bebechinas dal charoshim vayde Shabbos meis yucha odom lovel lechadish mas lali korban leskara d'Hashem mitshuma chadasha. You can bring a new korban. It can bring the same yadus, but with a new us, a sense of renewal, renewed energy. Could you imagine that's how he signs off on the one writing that we have? That Hashem, we should merit to see with our own eyes the complete redemption speedily in our day. That's what he ends off the one essay that we have. Tragically, he did not see it in his day, and he lost his whole family. But he leaves us the legacy of Sachachov. He leaves us the legacy of spiritual resistance, of spiritual heroism, of this one essay we have. And we too hold out hope that maybe yet more of his manuscripts will somehow emerge and we will be able to study them as well. Have a great night.